Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and yesterday on the show with the Nation editor, Katrina VandenHeuvel, we talked about the rejected handshake moment between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders after the Iowa Democratic debate on CNN, and we tried to make sense of the personal and political attacks exchanged between their camps, which at the time had blown up a kind of non-aggression pact between the two progressive lines. Now, this pact, which seemed to be just as much a symbol of their friendship as their shared vision for the Democratic Party, may be gone, maybe just temporarily hurt. And we don't know if Sanders suggesting Warren is an elitist or Warren suggesting Sanders is a sexist will be the downfall of the progressive corner, as some progressive doomsayers have said, or if any negative campaigning will hurt the party in November in general. But if it does, a lot of people will be looking at social media and particularly the role of fake Twitter bots in inflaming discord, just as it did in the 2016 election, inflaming it way beyond whatever Sanders and Warren themselves may feel. Now, very few people understand and know about this mysterious and influential universe, like my next guest, Clemson University Professor of Communications Darren Linville. He and his colleague Patrick Warren, along with a team of professors, have been closely monitoring and studying the vast armies of Twitter bots and their trolling strategies at the university's Social Media Listening Center, and he's here to help us understand it as well and take your call. So, Professor Linville, we really appreciate your time on something that I think is actually so central to what's going to be happening the rest of the year. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us about your center, the Social Media Listening Center. What do you do?
So here at Clemson, Patrick and I have spent the past 3 years or so, ever since Russian trolling in particular became really big news after the 2016 election, trying to understand the strategy and tactics of foreign disinformation in particular. Recently that's not only the Russians, though that's what we focused on, but that's also been Venezuelans, Iranians, Chinese state-backed disinformation, and trying to understand how they work to influence real conversations here in the U.S. and polarize those conversations.
You tell people that most awful social media bots are your friends. The trolls are trying to be your friends, not your enemies. Can you explain the significance of that?
Yeah, sure. Most disinformation, most coordinated activity from professionals isn't what people think it really is. I mean, I think people have this impression that Russian trolls are inciting anger in the people that they communicate with. But really, they have a lot more in common with Madison Avenue than they do with, you know, Soviet spycraft, although they do have quite a lot in common with Soviet spycraft as well. But they worked through a variety of means to first gain influence. And the best way to gain influence is to gain friends. And they do that by tweeting positive messages, cute babies, the sort of cute animals. I mean, name a cute thing and they're gonna use that. And also fundamentally just messages that the particular communities that they're communicating with are going to agree with. And once they've gained that influence, once they've used those positive messages to gain followers, they then use that influence to push those followers and to have more extreme views, to polarize them. Because at the same time that they're communicating to one left-wing community, like the Black Lives Matter community or feminist communities, they speak specifically to those communities quite often. They have other accounts that are communicating to MAGA America, and they want to make the most extreme perspectives on each of these sides more mainstream.
In fact, according to a Senate Intelligence Committee report, about two-thirds of Russian activity on Facebook and other social media platforms seeking to influence the 2016 election was aimed at black Americans. Why would that be, since blacks are only 13% or so of the population, and is that still the case now?
We think that the main reason, and the Senate Intelligence Report agrees with this, was to lower voter turnout among black Americans. They worked to support Bernie Sanders in those communities and to question and denigrate Hillary Clinton. Because fundamentally, you know, the fewer voters you had on one side, the better off it is for the other. And at the same time, they were working to support and galvanize the right around, obviously, Donald Trump.
Should we take a step back for a second? And for a lot of listeners, for a lot of our listeners who may not be familiar with this world at all, define some terms. We're saying bots, like people know what we're talking about, short for robots, but robots in what sense? And do we need to make a distinction between something called bots and something called sock puppets?
Sure, we do. Bots are, when you use that term, you're traditionally talking about an online social media account that is fully automated. It's run by a computer, by an algorithm. And those types of accounts can only do what a computer can do. They can only do what they're programmed to do. A lot of what the Russians and now other state actors have been doing are what, as you say, are called sock puppets or troll accounts. Those are run by actual human beings sitting behind a desk, engaging with other humans as really only a human can. And then there's a lot of accounts that lie somewhere in between that are partially automated. And then you see sometimes people come in and use them periodically. But there is a spectrum. But a lot of the most effective recent work that I've seen in this space, in disinformation, is by sock puppets, by real people sitting behind a computer in a foreign country pretending to be an American.
I would think this kind of thing does take human judgment. If they're going to accomplish the goal you were talking about before, for example, of convincing black Americans to stay home rather than vote for Hillary Clinton, that takes some human judgment and intentionality. So on the topic of bots, what can algorithms do on their own?
Algorithms can do things like make particular hashtags trend just by getting out volume. And to be quite honest, the platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, they're really doing a better job of getting control of the bot problem. It's still very much a problem, but it's not the issue it was just a few years ago. And that's another thing that makes trolls so hard to combat, because it's hard to spot, you know, a person when they're pretending to be another person, because they can act in a way that's hard to identify when you're using another algorithm, which is, you know, how the platforms identify bots.
If you're just tuning in, folks, we're talking to Clemson University Professor of Communications, Darren Linville. He and some colleagues have been closely monitoring and studying the vast armies of Twitter bots and their trolling strategies at Clemson's Social Media Listening Center, trying to get a handle and therefore help find some fixes to the vast influence that people are coming to realize that these programs have on people's electoral choices. And of course, here we are in 2020, where it's becoming relevant again. 212-433-WNYC, if you want to ask Professor Linville a question, 212-433-9692. And let's take a call right now from Alan in Brooklyn. Alan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Thanks much, Brian. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
I think we ought to be treating this phenomenon the way we treat our reasoning on the impeachment argument, that we can't afford to wait until the next election to throw out a bad president at the polls if he is acting specifically to interfere with an honest election. And the same thing here. We can't know until long after an election whether a certain volume of hostile bots have caused flare-ups like the one between Sanders and Warren. And since we can't know that, we should act as though that may be happening today and pull our punches and avoid allowing ourselves to be divided and conquered and restrain our free expression of emotion, even if that means that some of the liberal flags may be flying in quite as fast a wind. We need to be careful and not to walk into their traps.
You're putting the burden on the candidates not to say what they really think in strong terms?
They have to be circumspect about what might be behind the passion in the media. They may be up someone else's puppet.
Alan, thank you very much. Have you heard this suggestion before, and what do you think of it, Professor?
I have heard similar suggestions, and it's difficult. But I will say, mostly what the trolls do, these, you know, state actors, when I say trolls, is they take advantage of conversations that are already happening. Like I said, a lot of it is more like Madison Avenue. It's guerrilla marketing. And they take advantage of existing communities and existing conversations. Back in 2014 and 2015, they did try to create news quite a lot. They tried to create events that never actually existed. For instance, they said there was a chemical explosion in Louisiana or a salmonella outbreak in New York. These are things that never actually occurred, but they tried to make us think that they did. And those things didn't really take off the way that the Russians obviously hoped that they would. Those are tactics that maybe were effective in the Ukraine, which is where these sort of tactics really got their start in Russia. But in the United States, while we like to say we don't trust our media for facts, for whether or not something is actually happening, we really do trust our media. And so those stories never took off. And since then, they've really focused on existing stories and pushing existing stories and trying to raise the prominence of particular stories. And I will say, regarding the Bernie Warren debate, they have definitely talked a good bit about that issue, and we're following a number of accounts right now that we know to be operated from Russia, and they've definitely taken a side.
In order to increase the divisions in the progressive camps, in order to ultimately weaken Democratic turnout and help Trump get elected?
Absolutely. That's fundamentally it. And just as they did in 2016, today they continue to support Bernie Sanders.
Abdul in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Recently, Trump met Zuckerberg, so this is going to continue on with the triangle of fraud with Russia, Zuckerberg, and Trump working together to demonize, let's say, American Muslim once again. In three crucial states, for example, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Michigan, you have to win these three states to win the election. And there are 1.5 million Muslims living in these three states. So are they planning once again a repeat of 2016? What they did to us, demonize us in every way to win election?
Abdul, thank you so much. What about bots and sock puppets targeting Muslims or just putting anti-Muslim messages out there in great volume? Did that happen in 2016? You were talking about things related to African Americans. How about with respect to Muslims?
Absolutely, it happened. Back in 2016, an account I remember well that was active was an account called Jihadist Second Wife. This was an account that pretended to be a person pretending to be the second wife of an ISIL fighter. So it was a account pretending to be a fake account, if that makes sense. And it tried very hard to be funny, but its jokes were mean and very anti-Muslim. But at the same time, just as they had accounts that were pro-BLM, they had accounts that were pro-Muslim. They pushed both sides.
What do they get from pushing both sides in that respect?
Fundamentally, what Patrick and I believe the Russians are trying to do is push the emotion of disgust. The more that they can make us disgusted with one another, the harder it is for us to govern this country. It's easy to still have conversations with somebody you're angry with, but if you're disgusted with someone, then they're not even worth your time. You can't possibly consider compromising with them. And that's going to completely shut down conversation and shut down definitely the two parties' ability to have meaningful dialogue on important issues. And so by pushing both sides, they get us more and more disgusted with one another.
During a 2017 Senate hearing, Senator Susan Collins questioned Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey about the blitz of Twitter trolls, and she asked, why didn't Twitter tell her about this? Why did I have to learn about it from two professors at Clemson University? Nice shout out to you.
Yeah.
Do you think Twitter then and to this day is not doing what it can about this?
Twitter isn't the other platforms. They don't have the resources that Facebook does. There are some really good people at Twitter doing good work, but it's hard. And it's difficult too, because every time Twitter learns something new about what the Russian tactics are, the Russians are changing their tactics. And the Russians have, and the Chinese and the Iranians, they have a lot of resources to throw at this issue as well. I will say that Twitter has been very good, certainly in comparison to Facebook, about working with academics and releasing information. Most of what we know about foreign disinformation today is because of Twitter's laudable openness and releasing data sets. Now, they don't do it quite as much as I like, and they don't always do it, but they certainly do it a heck of a lot more than Facebook. Facebook is literally the worst.
Why?
Facebook is much more closed off. I think they believe that they can afford to be. They've got more resources to throw at this from every angle.
It's a harsh judgment. You're implying that Facebook would rather make more money from the debasement of our democracy and the polarization on purpose of American society than reveal the problem.
That's maybe a little more harsh than I would put it, but that statement certainly has an undercurrent of truth to it, yeah.
Jeremy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeremy.
Yes, hi. I wanted to go back to sort of this idea of suppression of votes and sort of look at what kind of actual data there was about how effective these bots were. Because I think what's been very interesting about this conversation is that the bots get used a lot to sort of say that, especially I think from a lot of moderate sort of Democrats that, things are so polarized and everything happened because of bots and people didn't turn out to vote. But then I'm just curious to actually hear what kind of information you actually have on the real impact of it versus it being really, very political reasons and people being very politically charged. And also just to push back against, I feel like this false dichotomy of saying that Black Lives Matter are extreme activists and white supremacists on the other side, whereas I think in some ways these kind of characterizations sort of play into this notion that like the only conversation that is rational is this sort of moderate ground, whereas mm-hmm. there's a lot of rational thought and, legitimacy in the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's not, a very radical or violent, rhetoric.
Right. Fair point that I would agree with about the lack of moral equivalence between Black Lives Matter and what they're interested in and white supremacist groups. But his data question is also very interesting, Professor. Did you crunch any numbers to figure out the actual impact, especially in some of the key swing states, of the bots in suppressing the vote or changing people's votes?
That is the million-dollar question. And it's really, in a lot of ways, an unknowable question. There's no experiment we can run. You can't take the trolls out of the equation to know what their actual impact was. We've put a lot of thought into how to analyze that, and it's really difficult. But it really asks a whole second question, which is, what were they trying to do? It wasn't all about votes, we believe. It was also just about the conversations. There has been some research done by some folks up at UNC Chapel Hill that looked at did they have an actual effect on individuals' beliefs, and that it suggested no. But I believe that's because they weren't trying to change beliefs. They were talking to people that were already inclined to believe the things that they were saying. They were working to entrench beliefs, not to change beliefs. One thing that we do know that they have had an effect on was who is prominent on Twitter, and I think that's very important. Well, we did some research looking at if you were retweeted by a Russian account, how did that affect your later behavior? And we found that you picked up many, many followers, and you became much more engaged in the days immediately following being retweeted by a Russian troll, and that's fundamentally because Twitter and all other social media, it's a dopamine machine, and people liked that dopamine hit.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNGP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio, where we have just a few minutes left with communications professor Darren Linville from Clemson University. Yes, there's more going on at Clemson than college football. And he's with their social media listening center, which follows this dark world of bots and sock puppets. Listener Holly on Twitter, and I don't think she's either a bot or a sock puppet, asks, can Professor Linville comment on the importance and contribution of continued troll bot reporting by us actual users? It seems like a drop in the bucket, but I do keep it up, she writes.
Sure. I think she points to something that is honestly a double-edged sword. Probably, in my mind, one of the biggest impacts of Russian trolling that I didn't mention a moment ago is the fact that we're talking about it right now. It's the fact that it has sown this distrust for each other, and it's an easy ad hominem attack now to accuse someone that has a different perspective than you of not even being real, of being a Russian troll. And I think that's very important because it breaks down real conversations, and it raises this emotion of disgust even more. And more, too, I have seen, you know, folks online, on Twitter and in the media who identify themselves as disinformation researchers make claims that when you really look under the hood aren't necessarily true. And I think that's going to become more and more often as we near 2020, that people will claim that something is coordinated activity mm-hmm. that may not actually be the case. That, you know, sometimes social media, organic activity, real activity on social media can look fake just because of the way, you know, the algorithms that are working behind the scenes at these platforms function.
Before you go, what more can the government do as we head into the 2020 voting?
Fund the Department of Homeland Security.
Guess that's a nice start.
Yeah, there's barely any funding for work being done in this space. There's some good work being done by good people. There's especially some good work being done by U.S. Army Cyber Command. But the folks at DHS need money to do their work.
And last question. You know, one of the Trump camp's defenses when they tried to say, oh, maybe it wasn't Russia, and obviously we know it was Russia, but when they say maybe it wasn't Russia that hacked the DNC in 2016, maybe it was Ukraine or China or a 400-pound guy on his couch. That's one obviously false line of defense. More recently, I've heard when they talk about not funding the Homeland Security efforts against this and other things, they say, well, you know, it's not just Russia. They don't want to leave the impression that there's this gigantic bot disseminator called Russia that's out there just helping President Trump. They say there are lots of countries trying to interfere in our elections and on all kinds of sides. How true do you think that is today in terms of the actual potential impact of what China or any other major player who may not want Trump reelected is doing?
Sure, I think it's very true that a number of other countries are involved. And it's not just about politics either. A couple months ago, we worked with the Wall Street Journal to uncover what Twitter was doing regarding the NBA. They, in the period of a week, China created 1,000 new accounts every single day. And the first thing on Twitter, and the first thing that each of those accounts did was tweet something nasty at Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets. And all he did was say something positive about democracy in Hong Kong. That's just an incredible amount of resources to leverage at one person's tweet. And if you think about what that means for the future, if China decides to get on board with the same sort of work that Russia has done in the past and they continue to do today, and there's some indications that China is doing more and more of that sort of work, that frightens me, because China has a lot of human capital to throw at disinformation.
So you're saying potentially, you think as of now, as we head into the 2020 election season, the overwhelming weight of bot impact is on the pro-Trump side?
It is. I mean, it's not quite that simple, because, again, they continue to push both sides. Fundamentally, the overwhelming weight of troll activity is against moderates of any kind. The work we've seen recently has predominantly focused on undermining Joe Biden and any other moderate voices and pushing extreme voices. Whether that's to support Donald Trump, which it may be, or support a more extreme left-leaning candidate, which it might be, ultimately, I'm not sure that it matters to the Russians or other actors, as long as it's harder for us to govern our nation.
Darren Linville from Clemson University's Social Media Listening Center. If you want to read a good article about him and his colleagues and their work, there's one called The Troll Hunters at postandcourier.com, postandcourier.com, to read about Professor Linville in an article called Troll Hunters. Thank you so much for sharing your understanding of this with us.
Thank you, Brian. It was a pleasure.